Got the club going up on a Tuesday. Got your girl in the cut and she choosy. Club going up.
Thank you for tuning in to The Queer Truth, the podcast that takes on a variety of topics from pop culture to everyday life. I'm Chantel C. You can call me CC, and I'm joined by my partner in organizing, Denise. What up? What up?
Hey. I'm going through withdrawal. I miss you already. Why we can't live together?
Never.
Oh my goodness. We need to start our compound. Just you and me. I'm gonna grow the vegetables.
Only if you lived on the other side of the acres.
Wow. Because I'm gonna be visit.
No. We will never live together in one building. That will not happen.
Are you trying to deny this?
We can live on grounds.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about. Okay. We're going to have a compound.
Okay, no. Not a compound.
Okay. We got to call it something else.
It will not be that.
All right.
So this week has been a very busy week in politics. I don't want to touch on that at all because I like my life. And I just try to live. And right now, it's about survival. So, but we will be talking about some of the funnier things that happened this week. Beginning with white people in their feelings. The Breakfast Club, which we've talked about before on the show. Power 105's The Breakfast Club. You know, they're on the radio. The show also gets recorded for television. They have The Breakfast Club isn't mentioned, I will say, But the people who work for Power 105 to put the show on, Revolt TV, are in the mix of what appears to be a lawsuit claiming reverse racism. Four men who were hired to produce the televised broadcast feel that, you know, they've been treated unfairly. The complaint charges that the executives at Revolt TV treated Black employees differently than white ones. Let me just say, this isn't reverse racism. This is what life looks like for every Black and brown person living in a white nation. So let's start with the fact that they claim that they were fired and replaced by people who are younger and less qualified than them. They complain that they were often told that they didn't understand Black culture.
And they also claim that that was not part of their job. And I don't even understand how they wrap their heads around that, because they are in entertainment. Well,
they said understanding the culture doesn't keep them from fulfilling their responsibilities.
Right. Okay. I'm gonna go work for the Matrix, and I hate sci-fi. Let me do that. Let me see if that production wants me on board. I don't think I could work for Comic-Con.
But I mean,
culture.
You know, they were known for producing Howard Stern's radio show. Now, Howard Stern's radio show has nothing in common.
Exactly.
With The Breakfast Club. And while you may be able to perform your duties, yes, when it comes to media and entertainment, you have to understand the culture if you want to be successful. So I'm unclear, one, about these tiers of whiteness talking about culture, and they were constantly reminded of culture. Isn't that what happens to Black people, like, on a regular, everyday basis?
It doesn't happen as often as one would think, because Black people that make it to the point where they get a position like this understand white culture through and through, and they got a PhD in it, and they could teach it at Yale.
Right.
Like, that is the difference.
But there's a coding... There's a coding involved that Black people have, that they're told, you know, they're told whether or not they understand the culture. I mean, that's the whole thing. That's the whole thing in first season of Insecure happening at Molly's job. Molly's talking to the Black intern who's a little, you know, too ethnic.
Too down home.
About maybe she wants to, you know, switch it up a little bit when she's in the office.
Yeah, tone it down, switch it up. Right. Yeah, because you have to do that to survive as a Black person. But that's what I'm saying, is that Black people don't get this talk as often as you would think. And usually when they are getting this talk, it is a cover for, we don't like you because you're Black. Right. Like, that's usually what it's cover for. It's not really about, okay, the culture. I mean, it's not like nobody forced him to eat chitlins and hot Cheetos. Like, that did not happen really? At the office picnic.
Really?
But, you know, it just didn't work out. And when this, you know, these employees also understand that they can't, that their employer, their former employer, is bound by some confidentiality rules where you're not going to speak about what exactly didn't go down correctly. Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, of course, we're older white men with experience. How are these Black people? These Black people, how are they going to fire me?
And they come in the office late and hung over. I promise I haven't heard anything that is unusual in that industry coming out of this complaint. All I hear, there are some grown people not used to being fired,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
in their feelings because they've now been fired.
And what's very interesting is that racial discrimination is hard to prove because you not only have to prove it happened, but you have to prove intent.
Yes.
So they don't even offer up a situation of racial discrimination. They just said, nobody said, hey, honky, come over here. Like, nobody used to slur.
No.
Nobody, hey, you know, like.
But they treated us differently. It was clear that we were treated differently from the Black people. The Blacks were treated better.
Maybe there were friendships there that you could not, you know, you weren't privy to. Maybe there were relationships there that you weren't a part of because nobody liked you. Like, maybe that's what's going on. Right? I mean, that happens sometimes.
It does.
You know, you roll up into a space and it's like, ha ha ha. And then somebody comes in the room and they're like, ha. So it happens sometimes. I think at the end of the day, I think that they're just scandalized by the fact that Black people did not see them as an instant come up or automatic come up just because they were white. I think that's what's gone on here. They thought, you know, we're going to lend our whiteness and experience to this ghetto production, and that would be enough. And when it wasn't enough, and on top of that, they got fired. They're like, oh, we can't let this stand.
Well, they could call it a ghetto production, but guess what? It speaks to the viewers. They got their viewers. The viewers are loyal.
Oh, they're doing well.
They're doing well. So,
listen,
hey.
It takes a special kind of white person to sue for racial discrimination.
It takes
a Rachel Dolezal. It takes a, you know, like, it takes like a Rick Perry. It's like a special kind of white person.
And Abby.
That,
let's not forget Abby.
Oh, yes, Abby.
Abigail.
Like, incredibly mediocre, and thinks that just because, you know, they're wearing some khakis, somehow they should get a pass.
They got the alligator on the shirt.
They got the alligator. Oh, okay, okay, okay. You hired. Like, okay. Okay, I didn't know that.
Speaking of special white people, another white person got fired unexpectedly.
Oops.
For doing what she does best. Tomi Lahren, who we've talked about on the show as well, went on The View. Again, why did The View invite her? I don't know. I guess they talked to anybody. Anyway, she went on The View and expressed her pro-choice position because she said she loves the Constitution. And this is great because this is an argument that I've brought up so many times. She loves the Constitution, and she continuously argues for the government not putting their hand and their nose in every aspect of a person's life. So how could she be a hypocrite and then say that the government should decide what a woman does with her body? That's not acceptable. So, quote, I can't sit here and be a hypocrite and say I'm for limited government, but I think that the government should decide what women do with their bodies. Stay out of my guns, and you can stay out of my body as well. End quote. She said that, and then her employer said, how about you stay home this week?
Yeah.
You're not recording your show. How about
that? Yeah. She'll land on her feet.
Of course she will. But will she move away from some of her more controversial views after this?
No. I mean, that's her whole come up, right? Like, I think her whole come up, I don't think so. I think she's of the whole kind of like reality star background, very similar to Trump, in that she says things just to say them. So whatever she says, I don't really take very seriously.
No, but I think this was probably the most real she's been. She's probably had an abortion. Who knows? Or she got someone in the family who's had an abortion. This was a very, like, if you look at
the clip,
she's being very genuine in that moment. She's not being her, you know, I got to get enraged.
Okay, but she can't extend her constitutional logic to Black folks, right?
Mm-mm, no.
She can't extend her constitutional logic around, like, if we, you know, the government doesn't get to regulate what happens to my body, then why are we unduly incarcerating nonviolent drug offenders?
Because they were doing drugs, Denise.
To their own body, though.
They were doing drugs.
To their own body, though. Right? Like, listen, I mean, like, logic. Like, if that's your logic, that's your logic.
Mm-hmm.
And her logic goes only so far as it affects her. She is a white woman. And so abortion rights directly affect her and her bodily autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
Anything outside of this very small circle of what affects her, Tomi can't get. She can't see. Okay.
In other news, we had a rapper that I've been following for a minute and I really like, who came out as gay in January of this year. And that wasn't a big deal to me, but it was a big deal to some people. His name is Mekonnen. And you might know him because you just heard his song as we entered into the podcast. You might not know him, but he's a pretty cool guy. He grew up in L.A. and Atlanta.
So you biased is what you're saying. Okay.
What? Anyway, he gave his first interview since coming out. Okay. He gave it to The Fader. And I really feel like sometimes The Fader is annoying. And it was kind of annoying the way they did this interview, because it was like stream of consciousness. They just wrote the transcript of everything that he said. Mekonnen is 27 and his dad is from Belize, or his dad's family is from Belize. And, he's American, young guy. He kind of had a rough beginning. He grew up in what used to be called South Central LA. He accidentally shot his friend. It really was an accident. A very traumatic experience for him after graduating high school, and so on and so forth. And he's just trying to find himself, do him. He said, I'm just trying to figure shit out.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever reason, my bad and bougie folks, Migos, were a little confused about what gay means, and said that Mekonnen had lost his credibility because his credibility in rapping about trapping.
Whoa.
Because he was gay? Because he came out as gay. Not because he was gay, because he came out as gay.
And I just love his come out. He just leaves no space for ambiguity. Coming out.
He tweeted, I'm gay.
I like cock. I've had sex with a vagina. Maybe one day later on, if I want to, maybe. Whatever. I don't know. I'm living and learning. I love it.
No, he's like really, really clear.
So that is like the greatest come out sentence of all time. So I just want to give him that. Nobody can mistake that. Yeah, I mean
Atlanta's not big, the most right? enlightened. Like Migos is from, like, I don't even consider where Migos is from Atlanta. They're like from like north, and then like Mekonnen is from a different part, or where he lived with his mom is a different part of Atlanta. And you got all these people in Atlanta. It's not like they, driving past each other talking about what's up. What is Migos talking about, though? Because we saw in Moonlight that you can trap and be gay.
Right. Migos. Yeah.
In Atlanta.
He was in Atlanta in Moonlight. That is true. Lots of similarities. I think Migos is talking about his own ignorance and his own sense of insecurity. And I think that there's a sense that if this dude is gay and he's put in the same genre as me, maybe people will think it's a gay genre.
Okay, so Migos is made up of three rappers. It wasn't Migos. Is not one person.
Okay.
Okay.
There's Quavo. Say the names. Say the names.
There's Quavo, who basically was like, after it was a really weird thing. Like, it's very hard to decipher, but basically they were like, Quavo was like, kind of like, you know, there's nothing wrong with the gays, but then felt the need to like,
all five of us. Okay. Okay. I got it.
But, you know, then felt the need to be like, but the world is fucked up. What? You talk about trapping and selling Molly? I don't understand. And on and on and on. So it's just, what I'm asking is, because we've already had this with like Frank Ocean and other people, what does trapping, what does rapping, what does whatever have to do with your credibility when you're gay? Like, what are you talking about right now? And why should anyone care? Most of all, why should McConan care? He says he doesn't.
But let's just be real about trapping just for a second, even though I'm learning new things about the plurality of Migos.
Well, most people would say you don't have to know anyone other than Quavo, to be honest. But it wasn't only Quavo talking.
Is he the Andre 3000 of the group? Okay.
I don't really want to compare them like that.
I know, but you know what I mean when I say the Andre 3000. Okay. Okay. You know, there's a lot of toxic masculinity that is all throughout trapping. If you listen to the music, it's very real. It's all up in there. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of sort of like heterosexist language and problematic stuff. It's not the most politically correct genre. Let's just put it like that. It doesn't surprise me at all that a lot of people that are in that genre are practicing what they preach and aren't just the most enlightened dudes. I mean, I don't understand the Drake connection because he's fading Jake at the end of the article.
So Drake is sometimes known for a little bit of shadiness.
Mm-hmm.
And Drake is kind of when McConan blew up. So McConan had his fan base. And then Drake discovered Tuesday. And Drake called McConan up and was like, this is dope. Let me do that remix. And McConan was like, yeah. So most people have heard Drake's remix of Tuesday. And so they were in contact after that. And basically, I don't know the whole story. I don't know the whole backstory. But basically, since then, you know, Drake was kind of vetting him along rather than saying, actually, I'm kind of done with you. And so he went out to visit him and, you know, he's up in the mansion. He's not being treated right. And he's basically explaining that story.
Right. And he says something along the lines of, if you don't want to mess with me, like, why did you
come all the way this way? Yeah.
Right. Look, I'm so happy for McConan. Apparently he was blackmailed by his former manager who threatened to expose him as gay. And he was like, yo, I will take the lead on that and do it myself. I think it really is a good story about the power of shame and when you refuse to be shamed for something like as essential as who you are, how you can have power over yourself and your own destiny. I think he's going to blow up. And he doesn't rap about gay things. so that's interesting because he's in a world where it's not like he's Cakes the Killer, right? Like he's not. That's not his subject right now. I'm not saying it will never be in the future, but that's just not his subject right now. And I like his music. It's just that it's going to be interesting to see how this develops for him. But this has happened before in genres that were considered like not the most politically correct, however you want to put it, right? I think he's going to be fine.
But today, in the context of people like Young Thug, who like comes out in very interesting attire. I mean, I've personally seen him hanging out at Universal Studios with interesting attire and big furry animal house shoes walking around Universal Studios in Florida. You know, but he comes out with this cover.
Doesn't he carry a purse?
Indeed. And wears dresses. So, I mean, I think it might be time for people to just recognize that sexuality and gender expression and whatever else you want to call those things, it's fluid. And it has nothing to do with street cred or whatever preconceived, na-na-na. Like, it's just who these people are.
Right. And it also, on the flip side of that, will not necessarily affect your misogyny one bit. Ooh. Yep. There's that.
In our second segment, I want to talk about art and racism.
Ooh, no, not art.
Or art and political correctness, some people might
say. I need to tell you something about art right now. Let me just get this out in the open. Art, like science, is not affected by your identity politics. Politics has no place in the art world. Art is pure, and it's just about freedom of expression, and it's just about free to be you and me, and however you want to put it, and our judgments and our political ideas should not
Becky,
be called somebody else's art.
Becky,
you're
not trying to hear all that. Becky, shut it up. We're not trying to talk about it like that. So, let's begin with The Carmichael Show. It's an NBC sitcom that I've never watched. Have you watched it?
Uh-uh.
They're like two seasons deep now.
Okay.
They're moving into season three. I've never watched it.
They got their three viewers, though. They all right.
They have more than that. And they are known for taking on taboo themes, if you will, like rape, police brutality, Black Lives Matter, Bill right. Cosby. And they have decided that they are going to air the N-word, and they're not going to use the N-word. They're going to use the word unedited.
Look, and white people has been itching to do this for years.
But this isn't a white person, right? So this is Jared Carmichael, who spoke to reporters, and he said, quote, N-word is childish. Say it. We know what we're talking about. We're not speaking to children. Apparently, the word will come up at least six times in the episode that is set to air when season three returns in May. How do you feel about it?
They just gonna say,
I guess it's going to have some purpose in the sitcom.
Okay.
You know, people have called it out. They said it was said unedited on All in the Family because All in the Family was racist. And they said, you know, it was also said on NBC Sanford and Son because Sanford and Son was telling truths back in the day when people weren't ready for those. I don't think
so
that those are comparisons.
Okay, so this is a Black person saying the N-word.
Yeah.
To other Black people?
Don't know. We'll have to watch the show.
So I guess it really just depends on the context, right? Like, so in Atlanta, isn't the word said?
Yes, but it's not the N-word as you and other people like to tell us.
Mm-hmm.
Saying, ninja.
Oh, okay. So they're going to put the ER on the end?
They're going to put the ER on the end as far as
what Black person would say that? Like, that's the thing that people don't understand.
No one says N-word when they're talking about the way that you people use it. They just say the word. I don't think we're talking about how rap people use it.
Okay. So
that wouldn't be the controversy. They're using the racial slur. That's what they've called it.
But they're going to have a Black person say the racial slur.
They didn't say who's saying it. They just said it.
Oh, okay, they're
going to
use racial
slur.
Then we can just assume that a white person is going to get to say the N-word. I can just assume it. I'm going to assume that.
Okay, I'm going to hold you to it, and I can't wait
because,
for you to be wrong.
Here's why I'm assuming it. Because Donald Glover, when he was released in Atlanta, he didn't give any kind of, you know,
because he was
full
disclosure. He wasn't using the racial slur. He was using a different word. The word you use yourself.
Okay, but here's... don't be telling my business. But here's the thing. If they're going to put the ER on the end, I just cannot see that within the context of two Black people talking to each other.
I think it's going
to
be Black people. So anyway,
talking
so
about
what you're
saying, Susan
so what
said at the office.
So what you're saying is, it's okay if Black people use the ER unedited?
I'm saying the way that they're setting this up, it's like, get ready to be angry. And I feel like it's going to be some All in the Family, my racist uncle type situation. That is what I am anticipating from
right.
that.
Sanford and Son said it all the time.
It wasn't a racist uncle in Sanford and Son.
That's
it wasn't
saying.
Even all white people in Sanford
That's
and
what
Son.
I'm saying. No,
I never remember.
There were white people in there when they were making a point of what. Of white
right,
impression.
Right, right. They only had cameo white people. Like, you can't even remember a white character's name on San Francisco.
No.
It was a Black sitcom. So it really, that's what I'm talking about. They're going to do it in an extra special with sauce way. Because it's been done the other ways before. And that's not really an issue. So they're gonna bring something else. And that is why they're telling you to get ready for it.
He said,
get ready.
Carmichael said, you can't be afraid of talking about things like that. So I don't think that it has necessarily anything to do with white people.
You don't see.
Anyway, you haven't answered the question. Are you saying that it's okay to put the ER on there if it's just among black people?
Black people say whatever they want. If they're talking about slurs that were given to them, you know, like they can claim it and they could talk about what people call them. They can talk about what was said to them. They can say whatever they want. But I think it's a problem when you from an entitled community that you then you take a slur that was used to oppress and kill people, and then you say that you're going to say it now.
Okay.
Right? Like, that's a huge problem.
Okay, so let's talk about a different type of art.
Oh, no, 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 no.
So let's talk about what's happening right now at New York City's Whitney Museum of American Art. The Whitney Museum has a Whitney Biennial, mm-hmm. which is a recurring exhibition, and there is an artist named Dana Schutz who has offered a painting called Open Casket. And the painting was unveiled at the biennial's opening last Friday. The image of the painting is based on the original images that were published in Jet Magazine and the Chicago Defender in 1955 of Emmett Till's body at his open casket funeral. For those of you who don't know who Emmett Till is, I'm going to direct you to Google because I don't have time to educate you on that level. Emmett Till did, and his murder launched the civil rights movement into full, immediate, forceful action. And this white artist has decided to use that. And a British-born, yet Berlin-based artist named Hannah Black, who has also previously participated in a Whitney-based residency, published an open letter to the biennial leadership asking for Schutz's work to be removed from the exhibit and for it to also be destroyed. I'm going to read a bit of it because I think it's important. Quote, the painting should not be acceptable to anyone who cares or pretends to care about black people because it is not acceptable for a white person to transmute black suffering into profit and fun, though the practice has been normalized for a long time. Emmett Till's name has circulated widely since his death. It has come to stand not only for Till himself, but also for the mournability to each other, if not to everyone, of people marked as disposable, for the weight so often given to a white woman's word above a black child's discomfort or survival, and for the injustice of anti-black legal systems. Through his mother's courage, Till was made available to black people as an inspiration and warning. Non-black people must accept that they will never embody and cannot understand this gesture. The evidence of their collective lack of understanding is that black people go on dying at the hands of white supremacists. The black communities go on living in desperate poverty, not far from the museum where this valuable painting hangs, that black children are still denied childhood. Even if Schutz has not been gifted with any real sensitivity to history, if black people are telling her that the painting has caused unnecessary hurt, she and you must accept the truth of this. The painting must go. End quote. Why? Why must the painting go?
Why, Cece? Why must the painting go?
It's art. No one owns art. There's no ownership.
This is, you know, if this was a novel, it would be a horror story because Emmett Till died because a white woman lied on him.
Okay.
So. And she went on to live a normal life. She then recently.
No. See, you're not telling the story correctly. You're not okay. telling the I'm story not... correctly.
Okay. I'm sorry. Okay. Go on.
The story is, and I said I wasn't going into all this. People need to know the story themselves. Look, mm-hmm. if you want to know what happened, read. Okay? There's a new book. What Denise is referring to is a new book called The Blood of Emmett Till,
mm-hmm.
written by Timothy Tyson, who took the time to talk to Carolyn Bryant Dunham. Carolyn Bryant at the time was the woman who accused Emmett Till not only of whistling at her, which is questionable if he was even able to do that because he had a lisp, mm-hmm. but for making advances, physical advances, and threatening her, which led to her husband, Roy Bryant, and his half-brother doing horrible things to Emmett Till, which led to his death. They were
basically
acquitted.
Torturing him until he died.
They were acquitted for his murder because it was Mississippi. Mississippi was leading in lynchings. Mississippi offered him an all-white, all-male jury. They needed less than an hour to come back with the non-guilty verdict. Okay, but what does that have to do with art? This is art.
So why I said it was a horror story is because the people responsible for his death did not have the repercussions they needed to have. And then you, on top of that, you have people now, a white artist profiting off of his death. I think that's, it's like injustice upon injustice upon injustice. Like, how much can white people exploit this little boy who's been dead for so many years?
Would it be really different if a black person made it?
A black person didn't make it. I think that there was a situation in Sweden, actually, where there was a black artist that created this this cake. It was a cake in the shape of a black woman's body. And then they had their head sticking out. And when people would cut the cake, they would scream. And it was really problematic for a lot of Sarah Bartman flashback reasons, right? And so it's not like black artists can't make problematic art and art that is in a lot of ways racist.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like that can't happen. But I think that on top of that, you know, art is a very personal thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you being a white artist that comes to this story and decide that you're going to now tell the story in this way by using a dead black child's body, super problematic.
The reason I ask is because you might recall that you experienced something in Vienna, and mm-hmm. the artist is from London. It's a mm-hmm. black. It's an artist that identifies as black, wears a gorilla suit
mm-hmm.
and a banana skirt, and claims to be paying tribute to people like Josephine Baker.
Yeah, it was a problem.
Okay, why it was is that? A problem. Why is that a problem?
This artist wasn't even from America. This was not an artist that identified as a woman, and it was for the black woman specifically. Josephine Baker was a black woman. For the black woman specifically, the misogynoir, which is specific misogyny directed towards black women, of that performance was so apparent.
Mm-hmm.
The artist comes on stage in the banana skirt, the gorilla mask, I guess like a bra type top,
mm-hmm.
and gyrates to some African drums. And that is the essence of the entire performance. There's no context. There is no, and this is in a majority white audience, I should note. This is in a queer space, New Year's Eve party in Vienna that this happened. And it was a majority white audience, as most spaces in Vienna are.
Mm-hmm.
So who is he doing this for? Who was he talking to? And what was he trying to say? I think that people don't understand the specificity of how we are targeted as Black women
mm-hmm.
and are very flippant about manifesting and perpetrating stereotypes about us in the larger cultural imagination. And this is exactly what this did.
And so if Dana Schutz would have... It's not that she's taken the image, right? She has abstracted from the image of Emmett Till's open casket body. If she would have left Emmett himself alone, or if she would have taken the beautiful pictures of him before his torture, mm-hmm. would it have made a difference?
Or I don't know, because she didn't do that. And I wanted to also point out that at his funeral, if you look at the footage from his funeral, white people didn't come, not en masse. It was for us that she opened that casket. It wasn't for them. They saw it on TV, but the people that came and supported his mother and his family in the wake of his death were black people. It was a tragedy for our community. It was not a tragedy for white people. It was another day in the life. The white people responsible that were clearly responsible didn't even see any kind of jail time because of it.
So is it ever okay? That's what I'm asking. Is it ever okay? Or is it just we own it?
In my eyes, no, it's never okay. I have not seen white artists do anything short of being culture vultures on black art, to be quite honest. Whether it's an Iggy or whether it's a Dana Schutz, there's something about the way that white people have been trained. I don't think it's inherent. I think it's the way that they have been trained to engage with the black body, to engage with black cultural forms that is super exploitive. And so when they then bring their lens upon that, they just recreate colonialism, whether they want to or not. It's habitual at that point by the time they're adults and can create art and do whatever they want to do. At that point, it's a habit. What's more is that especially white people that are, quote, unquote, good white people, trademark, they are loath to admit that they have these things that they have been trained from the time that they could have any kind of consciousness that are very hard to break. They're habits now. And that are very hard to break, especially in relation to racism, because that's, you know, the idea is that to be racist or to do something racist, it has to be an intentional act. It has to be premeditated. It has to be you wrote a manifesto at home and came to work and then you did it. And that's how racism has been sort of pathologized. And so they're like, well, I don't have a pathology. I'm not a bad person. And there's no way that I could have done a racist thing. Well, you know, in the history of racism and colonialism, most people that did those kinds of exploitations, when they wrote in their journals and diaries, which we now have access to, they're saying, oh, I'm doing this because I'm spreading religion, or I'm doing this because these people need medical care, or I'm doing this because without me, these savages can't control themselves. This is so the intentions were always pure, just like Dana Schultz's intentions.
Dana Schultz.
So at the end of the day, I'm sure she will claim to her dying breath her innocence and her purity of thought when she was doing this and her good intentions. And I'm sure that that's all true for her. It's like in Hidden Figures where the Octavia Butler's character turns around and says, I'm sure you believe that. At the end of the day, I don't. I don't believe it.
In our last segment, what are we excited about? What are we looking forward to? Let's hear it.
You go first. I just finished talking a lot.
I'm excited about the closing party this weekend. The BFI Flair LGBT Film Festival ends this weekend, and the babes will be putting on the closing party, which is sure to be lit and exciting. And if you don't know who BBZ is, which you might not, they were founded by two Black chicks who are queer and just want to spread the love with some good music. So that's going to be dope. That's going to be tomorrow. I'm thrilled about all the new music that's out right now. Although everyone was telling me to listen to the new Rick Ross. Like, I got hype because people were like, oh, this got me hype at the desk. Trap, 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 trap. And I listened to it and I like kept not hearing it, which means the music is boring. So no, don't bother with that one. What about you? Let's hear it.
So there's a lot going on. I'll actually be missing a lot here in Vienna that's happening because I'm going to be in New York for the week. And there's something happening there that I'm very excited about. So here in Vienna, Las Chicas is having their girl party, which I'm always excited about. I've been trying to add some color to the Vienna queer scene for a minute. I'm hoping that more people come out for that because it's actually a really good effort from a queer woman who brings in other queer women DJs from all around the world to perform here in Vienna. And I think that's great. So I'm excited about that. Another thing that's happening is that there's a Bad and Bougie party here tonight at Fluke.
I can't.
You can't have a Bad and Bougie party in Vienna? Explain it.
Because it's Vienna. They don't know anything about the... Like, just go to the video for Bad and Bougie. You will not see anything like that in Vienna. But go on.
Okay. So it's going to be interesting. And I'm flirting with the idea of going, given the fact that I have to be on a plane tomorrow morning.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. Tonight is Black Movie Club. We're going to be watching Barry. So that's very exciting.
That's fun.
Yeah. That's going to be fun. And so we'll see if we want to do the turn up after the movie club. And then in New York, there's going to be the Intrinsic record release concert that I'm going to on the 31st. And that's from Climbing Poetry. And if you don't know Climbing Poetry, I mentioned them before.
Yes, you have mentioned them.
I have mentioned them before. It's a queer activist poetry group coming out of Brooklyn. Also friends of mine. I absolutely love them. And it's just amazing that I get to be in Brooklyn when they're having a record release party. So I'm very excited about that.
Well, that's all for this week. If you would like to keep up with us, you can follow us on Twitter at The Queer Truth. We'd love to hear your thoughts on some of the things we've discussed today. So feel free to get at us. And check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/TheQueerTruth, and drop us a donation. Until next time, peace out.